So in lots of ways, this idea of merit, the conversation about merit is just the best person always gets through.
Mm.
We actually, that is absolutely not true.
No, it's objectively not true.
It is.
It's just not. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm also the host of this show. Now, with my world, the political world, in the middle of a substantial debate about toxic workplace culture, who better to bring into the studio than Kate Jenkins?
Hi Catherine.
Who's looking slightly nervous at that. That intro, anyway. Kate is Australia's Sex Discrimination Commissioner. And we should say, of course, the debate over the last couple of weeks hasn't been about sexual harassment. It hasn't been about that sort of harassment. It's been about bullying. It's been about culture and, you know, frankly, the unhinged culture of politics and how that we seem to have reached something of a tipping point among Liberal women on two fronts. One, a reluctance to keep inhabiting an unhinged culture, first thing. Secondly, also a number of them are seeing an opportunity to try and push the issue of representation because in the Liberal Party, representation has gone backwards for women. You know, there were many more women in the parliament in the mid-90s for the Liberal Party than there are now. And a lot of women are just seeing structural barriers everywhere they look. So what do you think about political culture? What are your observations about the workplace culture that you have seen?
My kind of comment on this is I think this representation is connected with environment and culture.
Mm-hmm.
So on the if I go to the representation work back to the behaviour, we know on the World Economic Forum there's a global gender gap index or global gender index. Australia in 2006 was ranked 15th. We've gone backwards, so we're now 35th, but we rank the worst on our measures on political empowerment. So we know that on those measures we are not doing great on that measure. Recently, Australia reported back to the UN on the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. So we do that periodically. And in their report that's come out not that long ago, in the last month, the committee noted and appreciated the aim for the gender parity in both major parties by 2025, but said they were very concerned about the slow progress over time, and they recommended some targeted strategies be put in place to fix that. So we know globally our measures, we're actually not doing that well on the progress for a country that's really quite developed and sophisticated on a lot of things. So then having a conversation about what you need to do to proactively get more women, because I think we've passed the point where we say, well, if you need more women, you're just going to get a whole lot of bad women.
Oh, well, love, sadly, we're not though. Some of the debate over the last, you know.
That's true. And that is incredibly surprising to me. So we know that sophisticated organisations want to get good people. But we also know that a diverse representation is going to deliver better outcomes for us. So if the good people are always the same people, then we know that that's not as good as we could be with diversity. So the conversation being about what are the... So in lots of ways, this idea of merit, the conversation about merit is just the best person always gets through.
Mm.
We actually, that is absolutely not true.
No, it's objectively not true.
It is.
It's just not. I'm sorry. It's
so,
just not.
So what we know in terms of the area of gender equality is there are mechanisms you can use, and this is goes to the conversation. I'll call them targets because that is what we're talking about, where you're looking at how do you look at what is clearly a past discriminatory practice and how can you fix that. One of the mechanisms, and in fact the UN said you should use this to Australia on a few things, Australians haven't traditionally liked the idea of targets or something proactive, but it's not that that is the only solution. It's that that's a mechanism to get people to start unpicking what are the attitudinal and systemic barriers. And for me, I think this conversation about behaviour and about how the parliamentary experience is for women, it might be bad for men as well, but it's telling us that that is one of the barriers that is stopping us building, you know, the best capacity in our political leaders.
Yeah, well, it's twofold in a way, isn't it? It's sort of like that there aren't the structures to bring women through, obviously, just self-evidently. Yes. Like, look at the evidence. The women aren't coming through, so there aren't the structures to bring them through, or they're not working.
Yeah.
And then there's also the signal.
Yeah.
You know, there's a it's not only women who would look at our political class and our political life at the moment and say, I don't want a bar of that nonsense. I think any thinking person actually would look at it and come to that conclusion. But, you know, there's obviously women are electing to have that view more than men, or they're not pushing through the system. So you're talking about targets, which I absolutely understand. What about quotas, though? Because in the Labor Party, the blokes were never going to hand over power. They just won't. Labor women had to fight that campaign for 10 years to get AA in the Labor Party. Yeah. And, oh, look, seems to work.
Yeah.
So do you think, honestly, that the Liberal Party can get to something approximating gender parity without affirmative action of some type?
Yeah. So I think there's a language thing, because as a lawyer, I guess, quota is usually a statutory measure with consequences, and neither parties have enlisted that. But when people, the corporate world uses, they call it targets with teeth. Yep. So we're going to set a target, and then I, the boss, I'm going to make it transparent and hold you accountable, and you might lose some money if you don't achieve these targets. So in lots of ways, I think that is what we're actually talking about, is we're saying we want you to commit to targets, but then do the work behind it to make sure you get good people through the system, that you're unpicking what's going on. So I'm in favour of that. I, like lots of people, have changed my views on that over time. I think lots of Australians on all sides of the political fence started saying, no, we think it should work. But actually, having done more and more work, you realise that it is not true that in every major industry that earns more, the men are always better. So we do know that there's some pretty deeply embedded barriers, and it's not just in politics. This is in lots of different industries. So that's, I think, a good conversation to be had. And on the conversation, I do think as well, on the that women are speaking about this, I think that's really fantastic. We're at a moment where people, whether it's because of the Me Too movement, but collectively are saying, actually, that happened to me. And the more people that say that happened to me, the more I think attention is paid to, oh, maybe it is more of a barrier.
Maybe
it's been traditionally easy to say, oh, you weren't tough enough, and, you know, like that's...
Like people said last week.
Yes, so that has been. But then once there's this kind of momentum building of all these people, you start going, oh, maybe... Which I have mixed feelings about, because it's like, well, if a woman speaks up, it's not listened to. But if four of them speak up, we might start listening. And if 10 of them speak up, well, maybe it's a problem. And so that is a bit of the history of, you know, listen to women. But I think that's the conversation. So I'm fine that we haven't got any names and we're not trying to name and shame anyone, because I think it's a broader conversation.
And just on the target, again, that's in your head, right? I get how that works in the corporate world, right, that you can make a CEO's KPI, one of his KPIs being, you know, X number of women, and you get, you know, you lose your bonus if you don't deliver it, or whatever, right?
Yes.
You can build in those financial structures. But how do you do that in a political party?
Yeah, you in any environment, you really need to have leadership that understands. And it's sort of a bit frustrating that we've got to justify that having women is better.
Yeah.
So, because we don't have to prove that having lots of men is better. But anyway, if you have a leader, my observation is when you have a leader that has a real conviction that we are going to be a better organisation if we do this strategy, whatever it is, that's when you get the action. So that's when if the party does really commit to doing something different, and there are lots of, you know, Kelly O'Dwyer has been putting, really applying her mind to this from the minute she came in. She is... not just saying we need to be better. She's trying to support people to start saying it's more sophisticated than just saying the men have been mean to the women. And I think that's right. It's much more complex than that.
Mm. Well, I would have liked to have sort of landed on a slightly happier note, but I think we can just land on the complex note. That's
I'm positive. So I'll be, I mean, right. I'm a bit some. Pollyanna.
I think that the last
12 months in this conversation has got people thinking quite differently, and particularly men. I think my conversation over the last 12 months about sexual harassment has been a lot of men saying, I did not realise, and now that I see it everywhere. So that's a huge difference. I think on my work, we've got these results, but we've got some work to find some solutions, and it's not about punishing people, it's about new solutions. And my sense is, I might be being more optimistic, but the political conversation on all sides of the fence, if it really does continue towards the recognition, so I'm not hearing it uniformly, but I am hearing, yes, we need to do better at this from a lot of senior men in politics, that's fantastic.
Well, it's a
and
start.
That's the start.
It's
yes.
a start, but it's just, you know, and again, I totally ruined a happy ending there, but it's no, well, it is just allow me a minute's indulgence. It is really depressing at close range, because I agree with you. There are plenty of enlightened men around the place prepared to stand up and say, look, we really need to change this. There are equal numbers of men standing up after events in the last couple of weeks in Canberra saying, toughen up, sister, don't be a snowflake. We had a former leading senior Liberal Party staffer, now consultant, saying on television yesterday that Labor women who get in through affirmative action programs were dregs. Mm-hmm. He apologised, but he said it.
Shocking.
It's sort of at close range, you do start to lose your faith that anything is really going to change. Mm. So I'm going to grab your faith, Kate, and I'm going to hang on to it. The Human Rights Commission this week has released its fourth national survey about workplace sexual harassment, and it's not a pretty picture. So let's summarise it for people who haven't read it.
The headlines are that we found that one in three Australians have reported being sexually harassed in the last 5 years at work. And that's quite an increase since 2012, when we found one in five Australians. So that's an increase in both men and women. And particularly notable was the highest risk was for workers between 18 to 29 years of age. Mm-hmm. It also told us that people still are reluctant to report. Only one in five people will report, and that's been consistent over the four times we've done this survey. But those who do, it actually told us that half of them find nothing changes as a result.
Mm.
And the other interesting stat we found was more people are noticing sexual harassment. So quite an increase in the number of people who say they've seen or witnessed sexual harassment. But again, those are less likely than they were in 2012 to intervene. So in 2012, one in two people would have intervened. Now it's down to one in three. So there's something about an increase in prevalence, but also a much greater reluctance to speak up. For lots of different reasons.
Yeah, well, let's think about some of those reasons. Why is that going on, do you think?
Yeah, our report told us that there's lots of – the reasons include that they think people will think they're overreacting, that it isn't serious enough, that they should take – you know, deal with the issue themselves. They also think nothing will change, and given the stats sort of suggest that people who do complain,
right,
nothing does change. And there is this sense of, I will be ostracised, I'll suffer some backlash. And I think we look in the community and there is a sense in the current climate that that's right. There's both this view that we should be more respectful, but also if you speak up, that you will suffer the consequences.
Well, the punishment of the climate is quite something, really. If you say the wrong thing, if you put a toe over the line in the wrong direction, the rebuke can be horrendous.
Yeah, that's right. And so to some degree, when I look at the results, it told us the most frequent incidents are about sexual propositions, comments, sort of everyday kind of conduct. And it's really clear on our results that people don't want to complain about everyday things, and you sort of completely can understand that. And particularly in an environment where it looks like people get hung, drawn and quartered for saying that's not okay, I think this is all feeding each other, that it then creates an environment where it happens more because it's not being stopped, and then it escalates. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. But I feel like we're in a moment where everyone's curious enough on this topic. The last 12 months has had a real focus on sexual harassment that I think there's a great conversation going on. So my job the next 12 months is to do a national inquiry to look at these results but start finding solutions. Mm. And it won't just be people need to sue more and more people need to lose their jobs. That's absolutely not going to be the outcome of what I'm doing, because I just don't think that's the solution.
I'll get back to solutions, but just one nerdy methodological question, because this survey is much bigger than any survey that you fielded before. I think you had 10,000 respondents for this one, and you know, much smaller sample sizes before. First question on the, does the biggest sample make a difference?
So I think the bigger sample does make a difference. The reason we did that bigger sample is that we haven't been able to break down by industry, and it was really clear right from October of last year that there was this view that, you know, media is worse or politics is worse or sport is worse. And so we could see that there was a desire not to just know the global number, but industries wanted to know, and is it bad in my industry?
And tell the listeners, which were the worst?
So there were one in three tells you that it's a community-wide problem. So all industries have a problem. But in terms of the higher risk, it did turn out to be information, media and telecommunications.
Shocked.
That was 4 out of 5. Well, to some degree, I didn't expect that, because I know we're getting a lot of spotlight on this. But I also know that it happens in factories, it happens in, you know, at aircraft hangars, it happens in banks, it happens in hospitals. So, and that's still true, but it did show us that there are some industries, arts and recreation came up as well. And then there was also electricity, gas, water and waste. So these are sort of quite different industries.
It's quite diverse, isn't it?
But my sense is that that is one of the things that I'm going to look at. Are there particular environments and particular contexts where there's a greater risk? And there is, I do have a sense where there is a greater risk if you're much less likely to complain. And in jobs which are unique, which if you want to be a television news presenter, you actually are not going to take the risk of speaking up or speaking out. I think for young people who are in insecure work, who are, so there was lots of in retail and hospitality, for example, if you've got a casual job, then you are not sure. You don't want to lose your job. You don't want to risk anything. So I do think there'll be something about the environments where there's a greater risk. Because
It's sort of twofold, isn't it? But it's kind of like, I hate that word woke. I really, like, if there's a word I hate in the world, it's woke. But there would be some environments where, getting back to that second point, whether there's more of it going on or whether people are more conscious of it, right?
Yes.
There would be some workplace environments with people who are pretty woke in terms of knowing what something is rather than doubting, you know, did that guy really brush past me in the way that I think he did or whatever? Is my boss actually propositioning me, or does he just share a mutual passion for wine bars? You know, like there's some, there are some industries where people would be more, well, I'm not going to say woke. God, I hate that word, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah. That are just more attentive to it. But then that sort of gets us to, is it happening more, or are people just more aware of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Look, I think definitely people are more aware of it. We ask the question in two ways, because traditionally people haven't been well aware of sexual harassment. So we've always said, have you been sexually harassed? Traditionally that answer has been low, but then we say, have these behaviours happened to you? They're all unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature. They're the behaviours that are sexual harassment. And we've traditionally found low on have you been sexually harassed, but then we've had, you know, a much more accurate description of what's happened.
When
in
you
the
drill
behaviours.
Down into specifying the behaviours.
So,
yep.
So this survey has shown a huge increase in knowing the word sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. So that to me is the awareness. But the behaviours have also increased. So that is going to be more about what's actually happening than do you understand it's sexual harassment. So we can't be absolutely certain, but I think the results are strong enough that it does suggest both is going
both,
on.
Both, right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And you said a minute ago the we'll refer to things to change it, right? And obviously yes. I don't want you to preempt your own national inquiry, yep. which is coming on yes. after this, and the government's given you half a million or something
for
that.
Yep, that's right, half a million.
That's useful. Yep. Chump change to run a national inquiry.
Helpful.
So, helpful, yes. Mm. So obviously I don't want you to preempt that, but I'm very interested in your view about how you change this. What do you do in order to change it?
Yeah, and a big supporter of that inquiry has been Kelly O'Dwyer, the Minister for Women. She came into this role and was absolutely strong on finding solutions. If I think broadly, so we will consult widely, both employees and employers, but also look at other places. And we're calling out for submissions, actually, and we've got lots of stories already, but I'm really interested in people who might just be in their workplace thinking, you know this gets worse when people are under stress or when we get a Christmas party, whatever it might be.
Sure.
My framing on thinking about this is we need to not focus, so we need to look at the laws and what they're doing, but we need to look at what's happening in workplaces. And my professional experience is that workplaces have been taking action. They've been putting in policies, complaints procedures, and training, which haven't had the effect. Like these stats tell us that, and then everyone goes to the Christmas party and breaks the policy, maybe use complaints procedures, but doesn't follow the training at all.
Sure.
So my focus will be thinking about both prevention and response. So a lot of the conversations end up being about response. You know, the incidents happened. Did the person, was the person bad? Should they be sacked? Was there enough evidence? A whole lot on the response. Should it have been published? Was it confidential? My sense is we need to spend more time focusing on how do we stop this happening? How do we make everyone just understand what is okay and not okay? How do we get rid of this confusion? And in Australia, we've been good on things like smoking, drink driving. We have kind of got that's not okay, and to the point where we wouldn't do it now. Yeah. So I do think that more of a focus on prevention as well as more sophistication on response, this idea of we've got a name and shame and that's the only way we're going to get rid of this, that's almost guaranteed not to be the way.
Yeah, but culture, it goes to culture, doesn't it? It goes to the culture of workplaces and then who's responsible for changing them. And one of the sort of pernicious elements in a debate where the victims are predominantly women of poor behaviour is that you get into these sort of quite pernicious debates that women are responsible, are the moral guardians of the workplace, responsible for, you know, making things better somehow. It's kind of victim blaming, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's part of the problem because women are often in the minority in lots of these cases and not in the powerful roles. But I know I've been in that. You're in a room mostly full of men, something happens and everyone looks at you as if you're in charge of stopping something that
you'll
really
fix it up.
Yeah,
yes.
Or that if you're okay with it, then we can all get on with life. So I do think that the conversation about leadership is a really important one, that where I've seen good practice and where I've seen people say I feel really confident to report, it's usually because the leader, who's often a man, has been really vocal about this is important, you don't have to put up with this. And that sends two messages. It tells the people who, you know, I remember in the past doing some work on sexual harassment and there's these high rates, but the majority of people which are predominantly men, so 4 out of 5 harassers are men, the majority of them wouldn't harass if they just knew it wasn't okay. It's kind of and so there are some people who, you know, it's pathological but generally if you can create an environment where people know, because they don't harass, you know, in other walks of life, if you know that's not okay here, then lots of people will change their approach. So I do think leadership is really important.
And leadership by men.
Leadership by men, yeah, I do think that. I also think gender equality is important. So we're talking about harassment.
That old chestnut.
And
what's
that's
wrong
right.
with you? What's
so,
wrong with
so
you?
So some of the industry stats told us that women are at high risk in male-dominated environments, and in fact men are at higher risk in female-dominated environments. So we know gender-segregated industries are not the most productive industries.
It's fascinating.
It is
that Lord of the Flies works both ways.
It does work both ways. So I do think that, you know, knowing in the current environment where we're having a political conversation about behaviour, I actually think it is really relevant that it's also moved to the stats on numbers of women, that it does seem like where you have gender balance, particularly in leadership, then you've got an environment where there's, it does seem this, mm-hmm. I haven't got the full answer, but there's less sexual harassment and there in fact is more preparedness to raise it because you kind of feel like, well, the leaders, you know, are on board.
Now, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, my producer, and his team. Thank you very much for that. Don't forget to subscribe if you do like the listening. Don't forget to share the podcast if you like the listening. Parliament's sitting again next week, so we'll be back.